Welcome to the Evolving Christian Faith Podcast. Where theology and spirituality embrace reason. Listening to the past, but not enslaved to it. Eyes in the future, hearts grounded in the present. Refusing to look back, lest we turn to salt. The radical perspective, it's in the here and now. What is an authoritative understanding of Scripture? I'm your host, Bo McGuffey, and that's the question I wrestle with today. This is part one of a three-part series. I like to use series to break longer explorations into more manageable bites. Now remember, the purpose of the Evolving Christian Faith Network is to explore new spiritual and theological horizons from a revisionist or a radical perspective. And so if you come to this with a more conservative understanding, this might not resonate with you. My current understanding of Christianity is strongly influenced by my minimal readings about deconstruction. The authors I read include people such as Mark C. Taylor, John D. Caputo, and Jacques Derrida. It probably sounds like a more impressive list than it really is, mainly because I've not read a lot of them. In fact, I've only read a couple of books by Caputo, a couple by Taylor, and only a little bit of Derrida. So I certainly am not a scholar of philosophers. In fact, I consider myself to be really more of an armchair philosopher, or just basically one who dabbles. Nonetheless, the effect that these deconstructionists have had on me is significant. What they've written and what I've read of them affects how I read everything. Now, according to them, all texts come out of a context, con meaning with and text meaning text, which is to say that this is everything around the writing of a text. And so when reading a text, we have to take into account the context in order to begin to understand it. Because when we yank a text out of its context and try to understand it, we might come up with some incredibly creative interpretations, but they generally aren't anything that could be faithful to the actual text itself. And so attentiveness to context is important, which makes reading a little more difficult. They further add difficulty to reading as they shift the meaning of the text from the author to that very process of interacting with the text itself. So rather than understanding a text as being filled with meaning that readers then drink in, these deconstructionists believe that a reader's own history shapes how she or he perceives the significance of that text. Meaning comes out of wrestling with it. It's kind of like being in a fruitful dialogue and then walking away, where in that process I have taken into account what the other has had to say, and then I process it, and the parts that resonate with me, those things affect my transformation. And the way that it affects my transformation, that is the meaning of the text for me. For many Christians, especially those coming from a conservative perspective, this idea that trying to take in meaning from a text is more like gargling than it is drinking from a straw, this is quite troublesome for them. I mean, they've been taught that Scripture is God's unchanging truth for us, and that it is meant to be a container for the essence of God's very own message. And so they engage the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Testament as part of a quest for absolute truth, which, of course, is the very thing that deconstruction denies. So you can imagine how scary this approach can be for absolutists. The deconstructionist worldview is the polar opposite of theirs. It's a relativistic worldview. All truths are personal and contextual. All truths are interpretations shaped by and that give shape to our stories. So, all truth is relative. For absolutists, this pluralistic perspective abandons the concept of a right and a wrong and takes us on the horrific path of anything goes. But I really don't think that's the case at all. Saying that all truth is relative isn't to say that all truths are equally valid. We still have this thing called a fact. Fact and truth are not necessarily the same thing. Sure, one way we understand truth is to equate it with fact, so there are times when the distinction between truth and fact blur. But for our purposes here, I'm working with an understanding of truth that has to do with narrative and meaning. Here, truth is the way that we understand how things are and how they should be. And thus, it becomes a measure for quality in life. Just think about how it's being used in this particular phrase. If I were to say, people live according to their truths. Truth is a personal narrative construct. Meanwhile, a fact is something that is provable. An example of a fact is this. I am recording this episode in my house. That is a factual statement. There's not a whole lot of interpretation involved. According to my truth, the message that I present is more authentic in its Christian option than most are used to. That statement isn't going to be true for everyone. Indeed, there are those, I'm sure, who would not even consider me to be Christian at all because I don't believe as they do, or, to put it another way, I am not in line with their truth. Their truth, my truth, it's all relative to who we are as individuals, but the fact remains, I am recording this in my house. One of the things that facts do is they help us to ground our truths. This is important. Remember when earlier I mentioned how taking a text out of context could lead to basically what is an unfaithful reading of a text? Okay, well here's an example of how facts of a context help us to ground our truths. Years back, I read an X-Men comic book. And in this particular comic book, a hero who was known as Maggot was having a flashback to a time when he was growing up in South Africa during apartheid. Maggot is a mutant, and one day, during some sort of general scuffle that was happening, he runs into Magneto, who tries to recruit him into his violent fight against the oppressive normal humans. Maggot turns him down, though, claiming that if mutants were to take up such violent resistance, they would become no better than those who would oppress them. One thing I might learn from this story could be this. This document is historical proof that mutants with superpowers are real and were actively participating in the fight against apartheid. Indeed, even Magneto himself is real and led their revolutionary movement there. If I were to make that claim sincerely, rational people would simply just laugh at me, because that truth claim completely disregards the fact that this is a comic book we're talking about. You don't get to interpret comic books the same way you would a news story. The fact that the text is a comic book, which is part of its context, renders the truth claim that mutants exist and resisted apartheid to be invalid. It is a fanciful, unfaithful reading of the text. Another way to look at that text might be to say, you know, Maggot has a point. If we treat others the way the villains treat us, then at what point do we become the very thing that we are opposing? It is not our victories that make us heroes. It is our methods and our goals. Now, I would recommend something like that as having a more faithful reading of the text. Indeed, truth is relative, but not all interpretations are created equal. What does this mean for religious texts? The fact is, there are a multitude of ways that people have understood and do understand Christian truth. I am a Presbyterian denominationally. Within the Presbyterian Church USA, we have a wide range of acceptable interpretations of the Bible and tradition. On the one side, we have the fundamentalists, and on the other, we have the revisionists. our denomination is more of a political union than a theological one, mainly because we try, anyway, to value the voice of the outliers, and we want to have a wide range of interpretation come to the table as we seek to discern where we need to be going. Of course, this wide range of interpretation has rarely led to any agreement on a common direction, which has indeed caused us a great many problems. I think, however, one thing that does unite Presbyterians as well as other denominations is this shared question. How can we tell if an interpretation of Scripture is valid? The books that make up our Bible have always played a unique and central role in decision-making processes, so it makes sense that in our interactions with it, we strive for attaining the most faithful reading we can. But how do we do that? A book that has been very helpful for me here is Daniel Migliori's Faith Seeking Understanding. He looks at the Christian tradition, and he argues that there are three basic rules, or measures, for interpretation. And I'm going to be placing a link to the Google Books version of this on my blog so that you can see what he actually has to say. Anyway, these three rules that he proposes are the rule of faith, the rule of love, and the rule of hope. What Migliori is saying is that there are prominent themes that come to us through text and tradition that guide us into valid interpretations of Scripture. And in essence, what we see is that the validity of the interpretation is assessed on how it affects life. In the next couple of episodes, I am going to break these out in order: the rule of faith, the rule of love, and the rule of hope. And while I do this, I want to show how I understand and how I apply these measures in a way that is probably very different than Migliori would. And so I hope to see you in part two of this series. And meanwhile, if you are interested in hearing more about what I'm all about, check out my blog at evolvingchristianfaith.net. Or if you are so inclined, pick up my book, Drinking from an Empty Glass, Living Out of a Meaningless Spirituality. Again, I am Bo McGuffey with the Evolving Christian Faith Network. Until next time.